We like to think of America as the land of opportunity, where a person born in the most humble of circumstances can overcome the obstacles and become rich or become president or at least become happy. The truth is often not nearly as glowing. If you start poor, you often stay poor. For some people, the odds of going to prison are better than the odds of making a living wage. The term school-to-prison pipeline has been applied to these cases. That pipeline is explored in a stage show, a one-woman stage show developed by the playwright and actor Anna Deavere Smith. She'll perform parts of it at Yurok Tribal Headquarters next Monday, October 24th. The name and face should be familiar. She's been in everything from All My Children to The West Wing to The Practice to Nurse Jackie, and she's been exploring other social issues on stage. She won a 2012 National Humanities Medal from President Obama and a MacArthur Award for her investigation of racial tension with law enforcement in Twilight Los Angeles 1992, to the deficiencies in our healthcare system, and Let Me Down Easy. Anna Deavere Smith, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
So you've gone for some fairly heavy stuff on stage before. Talk about the birth of Notes from the Field.
Sure. Well, I really didn't know anything about this until actually some folks at a foundation in New York brought it to my attention in 2010, and it really blew my mind. I've been teaching for a very long time now, but I teach artists in sort of perfect circumstances. New York University, I taught at Stanford for 10 years, and Yale and Carnegie Mellon, and so I've taught people who, first of all, when they arrive, they're so educated that I wonder if they really need me. And to have heard about some of the kinds of things that were going on with poor kids, black, brown, Native American for the most part, basically stuff that other kids, maybe even middle-class kids in better environments would do that would be considered mischief. And, you know, these kids are being suspended at rates that really show that they end up incarcerated. And so I sort of came away from that meeting thinking, wow, rich kids get mischief and poor kids get pathologized. And that, it really grabbed my heart, and I decided that when I could, which was 2013, 3 years later, get out there and start doing interviews about this, that I would. My plays that I've now been doing for my entire career are plays based on interviews of real people, usually from different points of view. And I have to say that having the opportunity to come all the way up there to the Oregon border and meet folks from the Yurok tribe has been one of the most powerful and enlightening and heart-moving experiences of my entire adult life.
I didn't give the full name. This is called Notes from the Field, Doing Time in Education, the California chapter. You just finished a run at Berkeley Rep, is that right?
Yes, I did.
Let's talk about the ways in which rich kids get handled differently from poor kids. Is the school to prison pipeline a deliberate thing? Is it a neglect thing? I mean, where do you suppose the
now I've done about 170 interviews in Philadelphia, Baltimore, Stockton, some around San Francisco, Eureka, and then, up, as you have mentioned, in the Yurok tribe. And I really think that, there's lots of different pipelines. There's people who talk about the womb to prison pipeline. There's people who talk about the cradle to prison pipeline. More positively, there's out there now something that's called the prison to college pipeline. And so I think that you could say, some folks would say, well, this is really the manifestations of poverty. Other people would say that, yes, that with zero tolerance policies, which began in the 80s, that teachers and other people just don't want kids in the classroom who do stuff that, you could throw a pencil, or there's something in California that there's been a lot of work around called willful defiance. Maybe you spoke in a disrespectful way or looked at the teacher the wrong way, and then you get suspended. And the Department of Justice, the United States, has done studies that show that a certain number of suspensions at a certain age will pretty much predict that a young person will end up in the criminal justice system. So, and I think also, in fairness to teachers, I think it's really wrong for any teachers who are listening in to blame teachers for this problem. You know, a lot of pressures on teachers to deliver test scores and all this kind of stuff. And, if a kid just doesn't bring in the right behavior, doesn't come to school with a kind of self-regulation to get through a day, they want that kid out because it's going to take up too much time and they got other kids that they got to worry about to keep those test scores up.
So are there any particular easy answers that I can't imagine there would be, or somebody would have come up with them by now?
Well, I won't say there's easy answers, but let me say this. I've been doing work around the issue of race since the 90s when I spent some time in Los Angeles and made a play about the Los Angeles riots that your young listeners don't remember, but you know, people over 40 will in 1992. Mm-hmm. What excites me about this particular problem is that there's lots of people out there working from different points of view. There's everybody from some of the kids themselves to people like Judge Abby Abinante, who's the chief judge of the Yurok tribe, who is looking at troublesome behavior not as a pathology, but really about, you know, how can you ask people and help people be more responsible? How can you bring them back to their innate sense of responsibility so that they can contribute to a community and the health of the community at large rather than themselves being taken out of the community? To people like Dr. Bruce McEwen at Rockefeller University in New York, who is a neuroendocrinologist, looking at how stressful situations affect the brain and what are the kinds of things that we can do about it. So now even science is stepping in, right? And medicine is stepping in, and of course activists are stepping in, and foundations like the California Endowment have put a lot of very smart people, a lot of resources into this. So what I see is a kind of a wonderful group of people that I'm meeting all over the country who are doing great work, and that really excites me. And just like cancer, we'll never have like one person who's going to come forward as the person who solved that disease. There's not going to be one person or one solution to do this, because it's really about how poverty and actually another word that's a very big word in our culture right now, inequality, how it really drains people of the ability to have productive lives. And I'm very privileged to be doing this project right now. You know, in terms of incarceration, it's the one thing that Republicans and Democrats agree on. We can't have so many prisons. They cost too much money and they don't work, and they're a moral problem.
The title of Anna Deavere Smith's show is Notes from the Field, Doing Time in Education, the California chapter about the school-to-prison pipeline. She'll be performing parts of it at the Yurok Administration Building and Community Room in Klamath, California, Monday, August 24th. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange to talk about the issue underlying all this. 800-838-3760 by phone anywhere in the listening area, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Anna, when you talk about all the resources that are now being focused on the school-to-prison pipeline, though, I mean, do we have any assurances they'll actually reach the places they need to go? Because if anything, what seems to happen particularly with public education is something gets tried for a couple of years, doesn't seem to meet immediate success, and then is abandoned in favor of the next new thing.
Well, I think you've answered the question better than I could. That's the problem. The challenge here is bigger than that. It's not going to be a short fix. I don't really think it's going to come from just policymakers. You know, that's why I was, you know, talking about the scientists are involved in this, and other folks. Even, you know, in Eureka, I met a group of public defenders that are just, you know, fantastic people. Joanne Carter, all of her staff. You know, this is not something that's going to happen overnight. I think it's going to be a part of a movement, frankly. You know, I'm sure your listeners are aware of some of the movements that have evolved over the past year, just in terms of how, you know, technology is showing us, you know, how police officers are treating some people of color. So I'm sure that your listeners have heard of Black Lives Movement. There are other movements, and some people think that we're really on the cusp of a movement that will be not just about police, police misconduct, but also about education, that the two things are coming together. And we're also under a bigger umbrella that we know there are many things about education that are troubling to us right now. Front page of the Wall Street Journal yesterday, big article on college and college loans and how much it costs and how much it's costing us as taxpayers when people have these loans that they can't pay back and they want them forgiven. And so this is a big issue that isn't, you know, just one local thing. There are things that are all interrelated, and we have to ask ourselves some pretty substantial questions about, one, why have we become such a punitive society? We incarcerate more people than any country in the world. And two, why has education become so expensive that only the upper middle class and the rich can be assured of having a good one?
Anna, you mentioned the more than 100 people you interviewed, and I can imagine that you some of these stories would have made your jaw drop enough that you wanted to spend hours with them. How much time did you get with any one person?
Well, I spend usually about an hour a person, but also with many of the people that I've interviewed in this project, I've stayed in touch with them over the course of these couple of years and followed their lives. There's a wonderful councilman in Stockton, Michael Tubbs, young man, graduated from Stanford, youngest councilman ever in that city. Another one, a young man named Sammy Nunez, who has a great organization that helps people coming out of prison. And then up at the tribe, I've been following carefully a young man named Callis Proctor and also the judge and some of the things that are going on in the tribe. So even though the interviews themselves only take an hour, in the case of this project, I have been, reaching back to people and being, concerned about what's happening to them, and I want to know what's happening to them.
We have a call here from Eli in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Anna Devere Smith about the school-to-prison pipeline. Go ahead, Eli.
Hi. You had said if there was easy solutions, people would have come up with them, and I want to mention that there are solutions that people have come up with. There are a lot of alternative schools and thought going into the fact that it's very unnatural to force children to be sitting at desks for 8 hours or whatever, 6 hours, that children should be out playing, that they learn best through play, that's the way their brains develop. There's much less behavior problems, especially getting them outdoors and active. And there's political reasons why these solutions aren't being implemented. It's not that people don't know what to do.
All right. Thanks for that, Eli. I appreciate it. Thoughts on that, Anna?
I think he's right. I think that's one aspect that is true, and I think it's particularly true, the research shows it's particularly true of boys, and not just boys of color, but white boys too, and that they're having a tougher time than girls are, and a lot of that has to do with this, expectation that you're going to sit still.
Tell us about some of the characters you portray in Notes.
Sure. Two of the characters I portray are two people I've been talking about a lot in this conversation. The chief judge of the Yurok tribe, Abby Abenanti.
She was our guest a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, good. And also a young man in that tribe, a fisherman named Talis Proctor. I also perform author James Baldwin, not from an interview of mine, but, from something else, that a recording that I found of him, as well as people that you have not heard of, a principal from Philadelphia, a teacher from Philadelphia, two young men from Baltimore, one who actually got in a lot of trouble for smashing up a police car. I don't know if your audience knows about some people call unrest, some people call a riot that happened in Baltimore in late April, early May. I went to Baltimore right after that, and so there's two people from that experience in the show. A psychiatrist, a young man who just got out of OH Close when I interviewed him. So a real smattering of folks, I would say.
In performance, the I understand the second act is interactive. How?
Well, that's going to change everywhere. I'm really experimenting with that. In the 1990s, I had an institute at Harvard called the Institute on the Arts and Civic Dialogue, really looking at how can I ask audiences to do more than just sit there. People ask me, and what's the takeaway? What should I be taking away? And I say, well, actually, you're bringing a lot. I know that any given audience, or somebody out there knows a lot more about education than me, somebody could write a bigger check than me. Look, you get that experience on the radio, right? You have people who call in. They know that you don't have all the answers. So I've been trying to think of ways that arts institutions can open their doors to their public, because we don't have that many places in America right now that we can convene, where we're different. They say the most segregated hour in America is 11 o'clock on Sunday morning. And so what I did in the theater in Berkeley, the Berkeley Repertory Theater, was stop the show right in the middle and sent the audience out into groups of 20 all over the theater, backstage, everywhere. And they had facilitated conversations about, what are we going to do? Because this is a moment where we can do stuff. I mean, I really do think we got a movement sort of starting now. In Yurok, I'm going to leave that up to them. I'm not going to presume to say that I know how that community will best discuss things with one another. And so I've turned that over to the judge. And, you know, whatever is the best way for that community to have a conversation, they will have a conversation. And I'll learn something from that.
We have some emails here. Mike in Medford writes, locally, it's pretty easy to track the school-to-prison pipeline. Tons of single mothers pay most of their paychecks on child care. The child care isn't centralized, so the quality and price is all over the place. Our schools are constantly having funding trouble. For the low-income students, what waits after graduation is minimum wage service sector jobs, and for about 7% of us, massive student debt. This is just the road for white low-income people. Add racism into the equation. It doesn't look too good. P.S. Love your strong character and Nurse Jackie. That from Mike in Medford. Shoshana in Ashland writes, is the performance in Klamath open to the public? If so, what time and place? Okay, and thank you to you for your work. She's a big fan.
Yeah, enthusiastic yes to everybody listening. It's open to the public. Okay. And I think you already announced the time and place, didn't you, Jeff?
I have the place. I have the date. I don't have the time.
It's 7 p.m.
7 p.m. at the Yurok Tribal Administration Building and Community Room in Klamath. Where else are you taking it in California? This is a bit of a road show, I understand.
Well, I'm going to Stockton today, and then I'll be going to UC Davis on Saturday. And so all of those are open to the public as well. And, you know, I'm just so grateful that, you know, the last comment was also exactly right. I mean, I think that's right. That, you know, this is something that is more and more, we'll see, is going to affect not just people of color.
Are there notes of optimism sounded in notes from the field or a pointing to a way ahead?
I think the optimism is what I mentioned before, or I would like to say hopefulness, is the people who are out there really working very hard. And as I say, you haven't heard of most of them. And I think that they're very inspiring when they speak. So I'm very excited about this. You know, look, on the one hand, I'm a dramatist, so I do love catastrophe. On the other hand, to me, I think each one of the people who speaks rings a certain note of hopefulness and possibility, and offers a new window into looking not just this issue, but at looking at us as Americans. All of my work is under the umbrella of a title I've given it for the last many years: On the Road: A Search for American Character.
At this particular time in history, though, the feelings are so raw about the criminal justice system. I just wonder if that's really come out in some of the talkbacks with the audiences.
Yes, yes, it has. And, you know, I mean, it's also, when you know, when I talk about people say, well, what's a takeaway? I say, well, you're bringing stuff. What people are, you know, my first performances of this were last summer before the events in Ferguson when Michael Brown was killed. And over the course of the year, we've just seen video after video of disturbing images of the interaction with police officers and young men in particular, and then, of course, some young women. And so what people are coming into the theater with that troubling images, with that raw feeling. And so it's not just what people say, but I think it informs how they look at the play. And that's very important.
The play is called Notes from the Field, Doing Time in Education, the California chapter. More chapters to come. Anna DeVere Smith created it. She'll be performing excerpts on Monday at the Yurok Tribal Administration Building Community Room in Klamath, California. That'll be at 7 o'clock. Anna DeVere Smith, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very, very much.
Pleasure to have you.